What do your parents say?
My mom says, well, understand it from my perspective. And I'm like, I do understand it from your perspective, but you should also understand it from my perspective.
My parents believe the best and purest form of love is preparing your kid for the worst scenario because, quote unquote, no one else is willing to tell you the hard truth.
Oh, I've heard that so many times. Oh my goodness.
Cool. Let's take a moment and appreciate that these are big things in our life that are going well with our parents.
Yeah,
like, these are
no,
big
seriously.
Things that a lot of yeah. other people don't get mm-hmm. to say about their relationship. You know, intent and impact are very different, but there's still something very precious about someone whose intent is to purely, purely be in your corner.
Welcome back to Bamboo and Glass, a space where we share underrepresented perspectives that shape our lifelong journey of learning and unlearning. I'm Taun.
And I'm Sophia. Thank you for joining us as we explore the abundant possibilities of who we can choose to be in our careers, families, relationships, etc. As a quick reminder, we share new episodes every Sunday wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram and TikTok at Bamboo and Glass to see announcements about our personal lives. I'm very excited for our episode today. It's all about setting boundaries with our parents, which I'm sure is something that we all have different experiences with. You know, even if we may come from similar cultural backgrounds, there are just so many things that shape our parents' upbringing, our expectations. So yeah, I'm very excited to talk about this today.
Mm-hmm. Especially in second generation communities, I think it can be really easy to hear very blanket statements when it comes to our parents, whether it's how we may resent our parents for things that happened growing up, or maybe we even resent them to this day, or how we're so immensely grateful for them for sacrifices that they've made and for the things that they've done to serve us and that we'll do everything we can to give back to them. I think these are all very big feelings to be sharing mm-hmm. that are all have their time in the spotlight. And I sometimes wonder if the nuance can be missing of how we can navigate relationships with our parents, especially when there is the validity to the hurt or overstepping of boundaries alongside a desire to treasure and try to make the most of our time with them left.
Yeah, I feel like our parents are very similar in that, you know, the immigration timeline is very similar. Both sets of parents have religious values, like particularly like Protestant Christian values. And yet I know that there are still a lot of differences that I'm excited to dive into.
Yeah. And I feel like even if we know each other really well, Sophia, I feel like our parents probably bring out a very different side of us, even maybe a side yes. of us from when we were growing up, a habit that mm-hmm. maybe we bring back, or it's also just because of our context and history, just how we've chosen to cope or how we've chosen mm-hmm. to navigate situations. So I think mm-hmm. it'll be really cool to hear what your perspective is, because even if we've talked about it before, I think we've never talked about it in depth necessarily.
Okay, maybe we can start off with some context about where our parents live today and how often we get to see them and under what circumstances we get to see them, because I think that probably impacts how we communicate. Yeah. I can go first. Mm-hmm. So I grew up in the Bay. My parents still live there. I go and visit them maybe 4 or 5 times a year, and I usually stay a week at a time. And I go back for holidays, for birthdays, or just when I randomly have some time. Mm. And it's my parents are in the Bay, and then my younger sister is still living at home. So it's usually, and then my grandma's there as well. So it's usually the 5 of us in person together.
Mm. My parents live in Korea, and that's not necessarily where I grew up. I grew up mainly in the States. They moved to Asia once I started college. And because of that, I kind of like this phrase, the distance makes the heart grow fonder. As a result, I end up not seeing my parents very much, especially because of the pandemic. When I do see them, it's usually for quite an extended time. Usually a week is a little too short to justify the cost of the flights. Yeah. And so usually I'll end up staying with them for weeks at a time. I also am an only child, and I grew up moving around a lot. So I would say that my parents were the main constant in my life, and people who they're the only people who would know all the different people I've met in my life and all the different places I've lived in my life, because they were they were the reason why I had to make all those moves.
Yeah.
Going back to how I introduced this topic of, you usually hear two big extremes of talking about parents, I definitely was in the camp of like being very resentful of my parents growing up. But I think that was like the norm. And so I don't think it bothered me too much, but there were definitely lots of growing pains, especially after entering college. I think my parents and maybe other parents too are used to me only, or their children only, knowing the way things are through the same exact lens, the same exact style of communication. And like my parents knew everything and everyone I interacted with growing up. Like my mom would drive me to violin lessons and orchestra and school and everything. And so upon leaving the nest, I can also totally see how those growing pains and conflicts maybe result from my parents feeling left out or not really understanding like a gargantuan number of things transpiring in my life. Cause they can't keep up with me the same way that they used to. They don't get to see me every single day the same way that they did. And when I was in high school, where they would see, you know, the days that I was really stressed out or the days where like maybe something unrelated to school was bothering me. They can't see those things. And they also don't get to see a lot of the highs of just late night conversations in the dorm rooms and stuff. And I think that's continued and has probably diverged even more after college, because I've just continued to live on my own away from my parents. And I think there's a lot of mixed emotions involved. I think I feel really grateful to them for a lot of things. I think the main thing I feel really grateful to them for is how they've supported me through like my career transitions, and also have even gone to the lengths of trying to be financially supportive of me. And that's not something I take for granted at all now. Yeah. And that's also not mutually exclusive from a lot of the other things that have continued to be conflicts in our lives. And so there's a lot of mixed feelings of like feeling like my parents are so backwards in their way sometimes, but also I feel so grateful for them. It's like, wow, they act in ways that I would have never even imagined to.
Yeah.
So I'm curious how, because you've seen your parents pretty frequently and pretty regularly, how your relationship with them has also evolved maybe since entering college.
I think the biggest catalyst for a change in perspective is, I would say, two things. One is me meeting my partner and becoming really close with his family. And it's just like a really direct comparison. I see how he interacts with his parents, and it's like, ooh, I wish my parents were more like this or more like that. So I think that comparison has been interesting. I've also realized another catalyst in like reflection is, as I've been reflecting on my own like stubbornness, my own triggers, my own, you know, just things I want to improve on, I realize how different the context that my parents grew up in. And I realize like how similar I am to them in terms of personality, and how like I could see a world in which I would think and do exactly what they do, but because I grew up in a different context, I'm different. And so it's like this weird recognition that it's valid for me to be frustrated at them, but I also have to realize like they have 30 years of cemented life experience that just, you know, kind of keeps them constrained down a certain path of thinking that's really hard to like move them away from.
And that's also hard to talk about, because then there's the other side of like, well, does that mean we have to just readily accept that they are the way that they are? Like, does that mean there is no chance for change? Because maybe there is a chance for change. It's always a double-edged sword. There's always two sides of the same coin, and it's complicated. I feel like there's always a but or an and in any statement that I make about my parents or my relationship with them, for sure. Yeah. Okay, so let's start off amicably. What are some preferences or boundaries that you and your parents agree on, and what has worked really well in your family context?
My parents are very respectful of my time. Like, they will not call me out of the blue. They will not badger me and be like, Sophia, get on a call with me right now for an hour and help me fill out this form. I think they always text me before a longer conversation they want to have. And they're very respectful of like my busy work schedule, or that I might want to sleep at a certain time. And so that has always just been, that's never something I had to bring up or negotiate with them. That's something that they just always proactively did.
I would say my parents badger me for sure. So they're kind of the opposite of your parents. But something I do appreciate about my parents is that they do check in with me before making a decision. My mom especially errs on the side of over-communication, which I think really influences my style as well. And I think that's just really helpful when making decisions that affect a lot of people involved. And in this case, it'd be affecting the three people in our nuclear family, my mom, my dad, and me. And so they'll, you know, check in with me before like booking flights to something, or they'll check in with me before sending things to my place. And I do really appreciate that. And I like getting that heads up so that I'm prepared. And I know my parents do that because they would similarly not want to want information to be sprung upon them where they felt like they didn't have the agency or the autonomy to contribute to that decision in some way. It's seared into my brain. Whenever I make like a career decision, my parents always ask me to let them know of what I'm going to do before I go ahead and do that. And I think I used to feel like that was annoying because I'm like, I feel like my decisions don't really affect you, but they do affect them in ways such as like the number of vacation days I get to go see my parents. And so I think they just like to be up to date, and they kind of do the same to me as well.
Yeah. Cool. Let's take a moment and appreciate that these are big things in our life that are going well with our parents.
Yeah,
like, these are
things
that a lot of other people don't get to say about their relationship.
Yeah. And like I said, I say this with like a firm heart. I say this with still saying they badger me a lot, but at least I really do appreciate that they want to involve me in things.
Okay, give it up for the Kim parents and the Sun parents.
Yes. All right. Now, for the meaty, the juicy part of this conversation. Yeah. Should I go first?
Up to you. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So, taking inspiration from our good friends Mark and Julie, I have split up some topics into levels of spiciness. So, okay, we're going to start with mild. I would say the theme for this is that my parents have a lot of fear of the unknown, which is overall true for most people, right? But I think my parents share their fears really in a way that's really negatively impacts me, especially when it's fears that have to do with like something in my life that don't affect them. And they are just so quick to think of that worst case scenario and to ask about that. So for example, when I travel, my mom especially is very scared for safety. And so my mom immediately goes to, you know, the worst case scenario and is like, send me all the details, send me everything, itinerary, send me the contact info type of thing. And I think I understood that when I was younger, but as I am getting older in my late 20s now, I think it's something that my parents are just not maybe willing to let go of the fact that I can take care of myself. And I think sometimes when it's the worst mental state that I'm in, I will go to the point of thinking like they really don't trust me to like be able to take care of myself. I do think it's super with good intention. I just wish my parents weren't so scared all the time, honestly.
Yeah, part of it, I totally feel that. It's like, I wish my parents were more relaxed and didn't have to like feel so on edge all the time about everything.
Yeah, like I think that's not good for their health, especially as they're getting older too. Like stress, we've talked about many times on this podcast, ends up manifesting physically. And we're also in our 20s and we're noticing that. Like imagine our parents in their 50s and 60s also going through something like that. So
cool. What is your medium disagreement?
Okay, so this is medium because this one is the most consistent. So this is related to what I mentioned earlier in the appreciative part, which is that my parents badger me a lot in the sense that because they live so far away, and not even then, they would do this even if they lived in the Bay Area when I was living there, they want me to call them every single day. They will call me multiple times, I will not pick up, and then they will try to text me. I might not read their text messages. And then my mom will go to the lengths of emailing me. And she'll email me with a subject line that is basically a text message and there's nothing in the body. Just so,
that
just
is so funny.
She knows that I'm checking my email, so she must make sure I see that. Yeah.
You are really an inbox zero type of girl. I'm not.
I am an inbox zero type of girl. And is it? And I will admit, one of my ways of navigating this is I am desensitized to how often this happens, and I will very easily archive my parents' emails, and I might not ever get around to calling them that day. And then I'll hear it the next time I call them, especially if I haven't talked to them in a couple of days, and my mom will immediately start off with a barrage of, how could you not call me? I was so worried this whole time. I thought something bad happened to you. And like, what if there was something bad that happened to you and I wasn't able to be able to get a hold of you, and there's no one around you who I would be able to contact? That happens, I kid you not, every single time there's a lull in communication. So it's a medium because it is a cycle. Like, it won't, it just refuses to end. And I think both of us are very stubborn and don't want to change our ways.
Have you expressed that this is a little bit overwhelming?
Yes, for sure. Yeah.
Okay. And what do your parents say?
My mom says, well, understand it from my perspective. And I'm like, I do understand it from your perspective, but you should also understand it from my perspective. And then she says, what's so hard about answering my text? Or what's so hard about giving me a call? And I think, I don't know if it's maybe like our relationship with technology is very different from our parents. My mom is really of the belief that if someone texts her, it is her duty to respond immediately. And I was not of, because it's like, it's so instantaneous and such a blessing to have that experience compared to, you know, what they used to have. And so my mom thinks it's, no one has any excuse for not responding immediately because everyone has their phones on them all the time. And so I don't think my mom really understands why someone just wouldn't answer someone back. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. So I think how I navigate this, when my mom does get to me, I think, to my heart and says, like, it really, like, worries her that I might get hurt or there might be something wrong and she doesn't know what it is because she hasn't heard from me, especially since she lives so far away. When my heart does hear that, I do get a little bit more resolve of like, okay, I do want to do better. And so I do my best, but I've also negotiated with her like, hey, maybe sometimes I just send a sticker to you and that's all I have the energy to do. Right. And she's like, if that's all, like, that would also be nice. But does she still barrage me the first time I call her after a couple of days of stickering?
Pana. Yes.
But that one is more of like a, it's been so long since I've heard your voice versus a, I was worried about you this whole time. So there has been some progress and we're both human. We're going to forget things. Yeah. And so it's just like this constant, sometimes annoyance, but also reminder that my mom really cares.
Do you share your location with her?
Oh, I would never share my location with her. That is a boundary. Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Mm-hmm. She would just check in and ask a ton of questions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. I think, yeah, I know. Yeah. Do you share your location with your parents?
I don't, just because they don't really understand anyways. Like, they don't really have context for what the different places are. My partner, so Kevin shares his location with his mom, but that's often because she wants to know, like, if he's still at work or if he's driving back from work. And so she can be like, okay, when do I start making dinner? Or like, when, you know, just kind of helps her arrange her day better.
Yeah, I think with sharing location, the reason I react so strongly to that is because I think it would definitely feel like surveillance for me versus like a checking in of like, oh, like, let me just make sure she's doing okay.
Yeah.
And like, if I ended up somewhere that she was surprised by, like, let's say like I was in K-Town at 11 p.m. my mom would probably call me and be like, why are you in K-Town at 11 p.m. shouldn't you be going home soon? Like, why are you hanging out so late? It's like that kind of thing. And so in that sense, ignorance is bliss. I think honestly I've had to learn, especially because my parents are over communicators, I've had to learn for myself to set the boundary of like what information I choose to withhold from my parents. Yeah.
Totally.
That was honestly a really hard thing for me to learn.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what my parents would think if they saw me at like downtown Seattle at 3 a.m. I don't think they would be awake to check. I don't even think they would like think to check.
My mom would check for sure. Yeah.
Oh, because also the time zone difference. For her, you're 3 a.m. It's like, yeah. She's like at brunch with her friends, like, what's my daughter doing? Mm-hmm. I think my parents would just be like, I think they know that I'm a very homebody person. And so they wouldn't even think to check. And they wouldn't even expect me to go out. So there's nothing like entertaining to look forward to when they open my location. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think it's because you've communicated a lot of things to your parents and they have had a lot of context based on maybe your regular visits with them, and that must be really nice that they won't be surprised by anything if they were to see your location.
I was so surprised when you told me that when you visited me in Seattle, like I'm a girlfriend, right? And your parents know who I am, so they trust that I'm safe. I was surprised that you didn't let them know that you were visiting me.
Mm-hmm. Should we talk about that?
Yeah, well, let's talk about, is that medium? Is that spicy?
Yeah, I generally don't tell my parents about trips because, one, they get worried about safety. And two, even if, like, they know you, Sophia, I don't know. I think they just inherently don't have a lot of trust for a lot of people.
Totally. And so I've never met them in person. Yeah. I'm also not Korean.
Yeah, and that's a whole other topic we could get into. But even that, like, I think my parents just don't necessarily have a lot of trust in people our age. Like, I think, again, I think it goes back to, like, they're young. Like, do they really know what they're doing? Do they really know how to go about safe, get around town safely? Do they, are they really going to make sure it's, like, an accommodating space for my daughter to stay in and stuff? Yeah. So I think my parents just have this stacking of worries out. Will go on and on and on versus talking about what I'm even doing. Like, what was your favorite part of the day? Like, I think that's not the first thing my parents would ask me about. They would be like, is Sophia taking care of you? Like, is everything good? Like, are you safe? Like, did you, like, make sure you call me, make sure you get home at a reasonable hour. And it's all of, like, the nagging that happens first before, I guess, being curious about the day.
Interesting. Okay. I'm trying to think, like, when I visited you in LA, when I told my parents about it. I think my parents, my parents have met you and they really like you. So I think it's like a fun moment for me to get to tell them that I'm visiting you. My parents are like, it's more like, I'm glad that my daughter gets to look forward to seeing her friend. So there's like nothing for them to worry about.
I think my parents have, because they've moved around so much, I think they really just believe that they're each other in their relationship and me. That's like all we can really trust. And because they've moved around so much, I think they've had a lot of experiences where, like, there would be people where we'd be hanging out with their families like every single week, and like to the point where, like, the kids are, you know, entangled too and like becoming really good friends. And my parents then at one point will feel really betrayed by that. And I think they just have had a lot of experiences like that where they'll discuss and they'll be like, these are not people that we want to spend time with anymore because they mistreated us in X, Y, Z way. And so I think because of that, I think they're very on guard of like making sure that I don't run into something like that. But I think, again, my reality is so different from theirs because I'm in this place where I can keep in touch with so many people. And also I feel like my world is just a lot bigger versus my parents who grew up in Korea and only really, you know, stayed around the same people from school and stuff. And so I think they have a hard time also trusting anyone outside of that norm of, like, you know, meeting people through school. Cause like we even met through a friend, like we never went to school together. So there's, I think that already lends itself to a lot of suspicion for my parents of like, how could they be such good friends when they haven't seen each other in like an everyday context per se.
Our friendship is pretty unconventional. So I guess when you were living with Irene, who is a friend you grew up with, who's Korean, who your mom knows, what does your mom tend to check in on regarding Irene?
I think my parents similarly have suspicion is not a good word because I feel like they have their concerns in that I maybe have not kept in touch with Irene for like in the last 10 years, let's say. And so it's like, well, people can change, you know? And in my head, I'm like, well, I think people can change. And as a result, we're actually even closer than we ever were in high school. But I think when they use the phrase people can change, I think they usually think about it in the negative way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think that theme of like parents worrying and rehashing their fears is the biggest barrier in my relationship with my parents too.
Yeah.
It manifests differently, but like my parents, they really, every time I go home, they rehash the same fears about certain topics. And I get really frustrated because it's like, I feel like I've given you evidence to reduce your fear, and I don't think you're taking the evidence seriously. And so I don't feel heard and respected, and I don't feel like there's a way to move forward and make progress in overcoming this fear. And again, you know, this comes with nuanced and mixed feelings, but like on one hand, I'm really happy when they bring up these fears instead of keeping it to themselves so that I can at least understand the context for their actions and not have to guess what they're really getting at. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I also dislike that they make me unnecessarily worried about things because I'm trying to work on being less anxious and less afraid and just being more open and positive. And it's hard when your parents are trying their best to give you advice, but they're reinforcing like an unhelpful habit of worry.
Like, I think all they think is about making sure their words come across to you and that you take it seriously. But I don't think they always think about how it can affect you emotionally to like start to have doubts about things. Yeah. And if you were to ask any parent, do you wish your daughter had doubts about things or feared anything? Yeah. They would say immediately no. But for some reason, for like fears that they have, it feels like they all of a sudden forget that that's not something they want to instill in their daughter in some way.
Yeah. I guess for them, there's a difference between fear and caution. They think that they're like inspiring me to be cautious when it's actually like they're making me be fearful and ruminating. And I'm already a really ruminating person. And so it's just unhelpful for them to reinforce certain fears. Mm-hmm. And throughout these disagreements, the one core difference I've realized is that my parents believe the best and purest form of love is preparing your kid for the worst scenario because, quote unquote, no one else is willing to tell you the hard truth.
Oh, I've heard that so many times. Oh my goodness.
I have a different perspective on how that love can be communicated. And my perspective is that like if the worst fear is unrealistic or unlikely, it's actually misleading and it's unhelpful to keep reiterating it. Like I think the amount you reiterate something should be, you know, commensurate. It should be like equal to or should kind of like convey how likely it is for that thing to happen. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to tell them that I appreciate their concern. I understand it. I'm addressing their concern and I'm working on validating whether the concern is real. I'm also trying to navigate it by asking like, hey, what information will help you see this differently? Mm-hmm. But I can't say.
Has it worked?
Not really. No, I feel like the progress
is
minimal.
Do you also feel like you're stuck in a cycle as well?
Yes. Mm. We're rehashing the same fears again and again.
Mm.
And it's funny because both sides feel unheard. They are like, Sophia, how could you not be just as cautious as we are? You are naive. And so, like, the more I push back on their fear, the more they're like, oh my God,
she doesn't get it.
She's just naive. We need to like double down on what we're saying. Yeah. And from my perspective, it's like I'm giving you information. Like, why are you unwilling to change your mind? Like, do you just, like it just frustrates me when they don't trust me or from my side, I interpret it as they don't trust me. I know it's not true, but it's like, I'm mad.
Yeah. And I think the fact that it feels like they don't trust you also can feel really disrespectful too. And it just sucks because it's like, you know, that's not what they mean, but it is.
Yeah.
That is the impact of what their words and their actions are signaling to you. I'm curious because you have also similarly been in cycles where it feels like things that you say to navigate the situation don't necessarily alleviate or mitigate this fear and this cycle. Are there things that you are able to do for yourself to kind of just help you stay sane or help you validate yourself too or reground yourself?
Yeah. Well, I tell myself at least they're telling me their concern and not just hiding it and being shady and mysterious and hard to read. So I'm glad they're at least airing it out with me. Another thing that I try to do is I'm like, okay, mom and dad, you're worried about this. Here's my rebuttal. I literally write it down and I make them look at it. And I'm like,
she uses that persuasive writing class expertise that they probably helped her out with.
I'm like, we've gone down this path before. Here are all the different paths of fear and where they lead us to.
Who needs speech and debate? You just practice at home.
That, you know, that hasn't gotten me very far, but
I totally hear you on, you know, assuring yourself that, you know, at least my parents are telling me all their fears. But doesn't it ever make you wonder, like, what else it could be aside from all the things that, you know, they're saying out loud? Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, is it really just this thing that you're telling me, or is it other things too, you know, that maybe they're not even aware of too, because I don't know. Totally. Like, I don't know. I have no idea what my parents' like wellness or mindfulness practices would be to be reflective. Like, I don't know if I would necessarily say my parents are reflective people
or self-aware in the degree that we've been trained to be.
Yeah. Because that's not something I talk about with them. Maybe this is a sign that maybe that this is something to talk about with my parents.
Yeah, that's true. Like, if they keep reiterating the same fear and not making progress, it might be because there's something deeper that they don't even know how to express or unpack. So
yeah.
But at least they're not actively hiding things from you, which is
for sure. For sure. Yeah. Because you wouldn't want to be left. At least they give you an answer versus leaving you hanging and being like, why won't you agree with me on this thing?
Yeah,
for sure.
And it's just made me learn, like, I have to draw the line. Like, I've done my fair share of making my parents feel involved, and at some point I need to just give myself permission to let me move on with my life.
In the episode where you talk about how you befriended your siblings, you talked about how a big topic and big strength of having siblings is being able to talk about your relationship with your parents. I was just kind of curious, do you ever talk about, as a collective of children, of how you navigate setting boundaries with parents? And just like, I'm just kind of curious how those conversations go too, and also maybe what you witness about how they navigate boundaries and conversations and dynamics with your parents.
The son siblings chat is popping. There's always my sister always has stories to report of what my parents are saying and what they're up to. That's an interesting question. Like, our three personalities and how we react to our parents. I think I'm the most willing to pick a fight. Like, I'm like, I've had enough. Like, I'm done. We're going to fight. Like, yeah, you want to fight? Like, yeah, I'm going to bring the fight. Like, I'm going to bring the fire to this conversation. My brother is more just like, I think he's actually spent a lot of time with my parents. And I think he's a lot more willing to have a lengthy conversation with them. And my sister is more just like, nod her head yes and seem to comply, but deep down forms her own opinion. So I would say my brother and I are the opposite, where my brother is like very open and like willing to have long discussion. I'm the opposite, in which, like, if we're gonna talk about this, it's gonna break out into a fight really soon. My sister's in the middle, and she's just no fighting, no conversation, just she nods, but inside she has her own opinion.
Have you ever experimented with pretending to be your brother or pretending to be your sister and trying out one of their tactics?
I haven't been able to, because my parents pick a very specific particular fight with me.
Ooh.
That has been very specific to my life and my context and very time sensitive. So I can see why they bring the fire and I bring the fire. There's no like equivalent.
It's like,
scenario.
Oh, we're gonna go right now. We're going.
Yeah, we're gonna go.
Oh,
and
man.
The thing is, of my siblings, my Mandarin is the best, so I can like
slay
my Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you're like doing a rap diss battle between you and your parents. But you're outnumbered 2v1. I always felt that
way. My brain thinks real fast. No, my brain works doubly fast. Don't worry about it.
Okay. She can hold her own.
Yeah. I mean, they kind of conspire together, but I'm still pretty fast, even though I have to speak in Chinese.
Are you able to see your parents as your parents still? Or I guess, what I don't know. I don't know how I even want to ask this question, but it's like,
do I see them as like a mentor figure?
Sure. Sure. But I don't even think parent and mentor are equal.
Like, would I trust my parents' advice on a wide range of topics?
Okay. Maybe let's back up. It's more like, what role do your parents play in your life then?
My brother gave me this advice once, and he's like, Sophia, I know you're mad, but don't flame them too hard, because at the end of the day, like, anyone can technically turn their back on you, and mom and dad, their intent is to always be in your corner. And, you know, intent and impact are very different, but there's still something very precious about someone whose intent is to purely be in your corner. And so the times when I felt most connected with my parents or most supported by them is if it's like us versus something else. Like, if I'm really mad at someone or really feeling really angry about a situation, and they're jumping on and they're like, yeah, that's so wrong. Like, they're like, yeah, do you want to, like, you know, do this or that? And they can, you know, offer like comfort or logistical support for me in that situation. It's weird though.
It's like all those movies where the two enemies become allies because they have a common enemy, a common evil that they would like to take down together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's nice to know that when that does happen, they will be by your side.
Yeah. Dude, I need to have a conversation with them about intent versus impact. I think that's a pretty new concept to them that they would find interesting. Oh, fun fact. I ordered James Clear Atomic Habits for my mom in Chinese for her to read, because I think something that she and I have in common is like we get really discouraged when we don't live up to our own expectations of ourselves, and it's really easy for us to get stuck in like our bad habits. And I think she would feel a lot more empowered and happy if she was able to like take action instead of just like complaining about herself or feeling down about herself. So I ordered her the book, and she's
like that's not something a lot of kids would do, honestly. Think a lot of kids would think, hey, like, I recognize the similarity with, like, aside from like shared interests and hobbies, like personality or motivation. Like, I feel like not a lot of kids think about that and think about, what is something my parent will appreciate to receive. I'm very touched on behalf of your mom.
I hope she's touched too. I think she likes the book. But yeah, I also just think that if each person feels more secure and happy in themselves and how they're growing, they just have less critical energy to expend on other people. Because I think oftentimes you criticize other people because you are criticizing yourself. And there's just, I don't know, there's some sort of like negative cycle and energy there.
I mean, there's that phrase of the way that people respond is more of a reflection of themselves than of you. Like someone telling you that you're stupid is more of a reflection of them than it is of you actually being stupid. And I think that has to do a lot with like whether they feel secure in themselves, for sure.
Another thing is I am very scared of one day maybe having kids and devoting a lot of time to raising my kids and losing myself and losing my goals. And so I'm like giving my mom this book and hoping that it like helps her grow in the way she wants to grow, because I kind of see like me in 30 years. Because
if she does that, then that is an example of success for you.
And it's like, yeah. And it's like, it gives me hope that I could one day be a parent and raise, you know, multiple kids and still retain my personality. So
you're you're literally parenting your parent.
Like, my parent to give me hope that one day I could be, one day, like, I can go down a good path and that a good path is possible.
And you have the most info and context about your mom. And so it only, like, I feel like even if you saw, you know, a mentor figure be able to do a lot of those things, I feel like I would definitely get stuck in that circle of like, well, like, they're different from me in this and this and this way. And like, I don't actually know if like, maybe they had something different from me versus like your mom. I feel like you have a lot of the info laid out for you aside from the time before you were born, but you have a lot of info laid out in front of you. And so it feels like more personalized. It feels like their success is your success.
Right. And it's like, it almost, I feel like where she goes from this point in her life is almost to me like an indication of where it's possible for me to go. Like, I almost need my mom to like go a certain direction in life to reassure me that like that direction is like possible for me too.
It's interesting that you feel like you're so different from your parents in a lot of like ideologies or ways of, or communication styles, etc. And yet like we still see ourselves in our parents.
Yeah, I think I'm only different from them because of circumstance. I don't think it has anything innate to do with our personality or temperament. Like, I think I'm very, very similar to my mom.
I think a lot of, you know, what we're talking about, boundaries and evaluating our relationship with our parents, I think a lot of that does inform my hesitation to have children. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the only direction my brain ever goes is that I don't want to pass on any baggage or trauma that I have unknowingly to, you know, just like this pure innocent blank slate. Because then it feels like that's all on me. Like, it feels like that's all on me to have unlearned and made myself the best version of myself. And I know that's like, no parent is like that. I know that. But I think, I think that thought, and given the context, I think it just feels so crippling because I feel like I've just so clearly seen like intergenerational trauma in my life. And so I guess I could talk about my spiciest conflict. I've been in my first relationship for the last almost 7 years, which I think in any circumstance, what a big deal. What a big deal to have been together with someone and
7 years.
Yeah, to have like committed to someone for that long, to commit to like working through so many things and also growing together.
Yeah.
And I think this really alludes to what you had said earlier about where your perspective changed and how it started with dating your partner. I think definitely as I spend more time with someone, especially a significant other, like my idea and expectations and beliefs about commitment in a relationship will change and also probably diverge and be different from my parents. And so I think when I reflect on especially the first couple years of our relationship, on my side, I think there was a lot of internalized beliefs of like success, backgrounds, gender norms even, that I've had to put in so much work and time to unlearn over the years. And it's like, I think about how far I've come and I'm like, how does one even begin to approach their parents about unlearning all of that when it was so labor intensive, but also such a slow process
and required burn. Like a community, like all this, a lot of this learning happened when you were in school, right? And also, you know, in the communities you sought out after school. I think for me, like giving my mom that book is my way of trying to like introduce her to new thoughts and patterns. Cause like for me, that book was so empowering because I think it talks a lot about like, you know, goal setting, whatever, but like also like identity formation and like, you know, changing your view of yourself. And I think that is like really like a very foundational, a new perspective. But yeah, I agree. How do I catch my parents up when they don't have any of this, you know, resources or surrounding people and community?
Yeah. And so I think as like, obviously on my side, like I think there was definitely a lot of tumultuous moments of like, you know, growing pains of learning how to be in a relationship with someone, especially if the other person too, like, regardless of anyone's relationship history, but also because my partner, this was his first relationship. And so there was a lot of bumps along the road, obviously. And I feel like now there's still sometimes bumps, but I would say like we've learned so much about each other. But definitely the first couple years, alongside that tumultuous moment, there was also a lot of crying on both my part and my mom's part, because going back to, you know, the rehashing the fears, rehashing the worries that my mom has, it's like, well, I was 20 years old, and like my mom's worried about marriage, and I was like, that's a lot to instill into your daughter to worry about. And communication style my mom uses a lot that I started noticing was that my mom would speak on behalf of both my parents, but I wouldn't ever really hear anything explicit from my dad. And so there had to be a point where I just straight up said, why are you speaking on behalf of dad too? Like, I want to hear what dad has to say. And my dad didn't necessarily agree with everything my mom said, but because my mom was like way more opinionated about the subject matter, he kind of like lets her take the reins. But in like private conversations, like he would tell me that it wasn't like, it was mainly my mom that had those thoughts. But I think that was really hard because I felt the 2v1 thing all the time, like throughout my whole life. And I think it was, I think I say that there was a lot of crying to just signal how challenging it was to even talk about what was so hurtful and what was so triggering, maybe, about the fact that I was in a relationship, and I was in a relationship with maybe someone that, who, like, in any case, like, how are parents ever going to be satisfied with like who you're dating, right? They will all they want a god to be dating, you know, their kid. And so I think there were just so many things that my mom could, you know, so quote unquote clearly see as red flags or warning flags. And but those are like in her eyes of like her generation of the way that she's used to doing things. And I think that was so hard when we're not, like, let alone talking about being on the same page, talk about being on the same book. Like, we're not even in the same books about a lot of this stuff as I'm, you know, trying to redefine things between me and the person that is directly involved in this relationship. So it's such a challenging and intimate conversation and conflict to be having. And so honestly, the way that I navigate it is we don't talk about it for the most part. And I think I don't talk about it because of the fact that there's historically been a lot of crying. I know that the kind of evidence that I would want to give my mom is physical, real life evidence of my mom just interacting with the world that I live in. And my mom can't do that because she lives on the other side of the world. And so it's just kind of a shitty circumstance to be in.
Yeah, I feel like relationships with parents can range from you being so close with them, like you're on the same page, to like a little more distant, which is like you're in the same book, you know, they're getting there. But for us, it's like you're on a different bookshelf. Like you're not even in the same library. Like,
you're not in the same bookstore.
Yeah. How do we even get you to the bookstore?
Yeah, definitely. And I think what's so challenging about this is also that I don't want my parents to be so sad about my relationship.
And the thing is, like, there's like what they're worried about, it's like, I wish my parents could understand, like, hey, you know, there's a lot to be happy about. And like, I wish you could / I wish you could choose to be happy about all the things there are to be happy about.
Yeah, like I wish my parents could see that I am really happy. And I think in a way I'm kind of emulating my parents, because I'm not even saying that like I want them to be happy. I just don't want them to be worried and to be scared about something like this. And in many ways, again, I'm so grateful that their intent is to look out for me and to only want the best for me. I did want to share a recent thing that happened though with my mom that I think made me feel really hopeful on the topic of whether we could see our parents change. So I was going through the job process for many different jobs, and I was waiting to hear back from something, and I was so devastated to find out I got rejected. And I had, of course, been doing the over communication as my mom had requested and telling her about everything. And I just was really upset, and I told her about this rejection. And she ended up going into this pep talk about, you know, it's like the most archaic phrase, but like, failure is the ancestor or the precedent to success, is the mother of success. Yeah. And she was saying all this stuff, and I felt like I couldn't really take it in because I was just thinking, wow, this is such an old fashioned phrase that's being used. And two, my mom never said anything like that growing up. When I would get an A- on a test, she would never say
doom and gloom.
Failure is the mother of success. She'd be like crossing her hands in the car, and I see her crossing her hands, and I'm like, I'm about to get a big whooping right now. And I stopped her and I was like, how come you never said this to me, like, before college? Like, you've never said anything like this to me. And then she said, you know, I was young back then too.
Oh my God.
And I couldn't believe my mom would ever admit something like that.
Holy shit. Oh my God, I'm crying. Wow.
And I feel like that gave me a lot of hope, for sure, of even if things feel like they're so stuck, like, things will get better. Things have a possibility of getting better. Even if it's like 0.01% getting better, it could get better.
It's like their first time being a parent. Like, I don't know, imagine?
Yeah, like, I feel like I think her saying that made me think about, like, how hard must it have been for them to move to America? How hard must it have been for them to try to find the best school for their kid to go to? Like, it made me so much more empathetic. And, like, I think I just wish that my parents knew that maybe hearing something like that earlier would have been okay.
Yeah. It's like they did so many of the big heroic things.
Yeah. I think they felt like they had to be strong in front of us. Right. They had to have all the answers for us. And I think they just got used to that too. Because there was a time in our life when we did need to just be told what was right and what was wrong. But now we don't need to be told that.
Yeah. Like, imagine how many years of, like, progressive peers and progressive content and, you know, progressive Instagram things we followed for us to even come to the realization that failure is something that we could embrace. Like, I don't, like, how do our parents, like, oh my God, like, what books is your mom reading? Like, what Instagram accounts is she following? Like, Miss Kim, like, please recommend, get her on the podcast. Yeah. Oh, thank you for suggesting this topic. This really went in many directions I did not expect, but as usual, a delightful conversation.
Yeah, and thank you so much for being open to sharing about what your dynamic with your parents are. I think the reason I feel so grateful is I think even if we have these concerns or conflicts with our parents, I think we probably both feel protective of our parents in some way.
Yeah.
Like, we don't want any slander outside of the family coming into the family, and it can be really vulnerable to share, you know, some of the not so great parts of family life, because it could end up becoming the only thing that people know about your parents. And so I just really appreciate that we got to talk about this together and share
a balanced conversation.
Yeah, definitely. So, listeners, I hope you enjoyed our conversation today. If you are interested in opening up the conversation with a friend and want to talk to them about this topic, consider letting them know that we're on every podcasting platform. You can also let them know that we're on Instagram and TikTok at Bamboo and Glass. We also have over 200 episodes that have just us, or also with guests, where we talk about so many other things dealing with reckoning with our place in the world and just opening up the possibilities of who we can be and who we can be in relationships with people. So there's a lot of things that you can recommend them. And if you've been following us for a long time, consider sharing a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We may be adding a trailer to Spotify soon, so you might want to check that out too. And your friends can also check out those stories as well. And with that, I hope you all have a great rest of your week. I hope it's restful or energetic, whichever direction you want to go. And we'll talk to you next episode. Bye!